The governance for multifamily, really, that's for me, it's really foresight is what I'm looking at. Cause you know, we're already talking about and implementing some of these, you know, these components that are kind of hitting. But for me, the governance is not only the foresight, the planning. You know, you got to have the vision, really. It's planning the vision for the future of that asset, what you're doing, you know, thinking down the road. But it's also, you know, making sure that what you're practicing what you're preaching and measuring those.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Will Morris. Will, thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it'll be great to share your story with everyone and some information and learning about multifamily real estate investing. So everyone, Will Morris is CEO of the Blue Aura Group, which buys income-generating real assets that focus on growing investors' wealth with a positive impact. He's also the founder of other businesses that vertically integrate into investment strategies, and he's featured in the top 100 business leaders of 2021. Wow, that's awesome. So Will, can't wait to hear more about what you're doing today. Will you please take us back in time and tell us how it is you got started in the real estate space?
Yeah, I actually got started as a general contractor, probably about 2010, I guess it was. I went to school for civil engineering for 3 years, did an internship in place of my senior year, hated every minute of it. So I dropped out, got my GC license and started doing remodels and whatnot. Well, about 2010, I had an opportunity. I got introduced to a pretty large multifamily syndicator, owner operator, and they had a property here in Knoxville that was 244 units, and they were doing what I now know as a value add. They were going in and creating some forced appreciation. And basically, I had a chance to come in as the general contractor. I wooed them, and they ended up giving me a shot at it. And so I started out. That was sort of how I got into real estate as a general contractor. I went through a couple hundred units seeing that. From the value add standpoint, I noticed that a lot of the rehabs, you know, we were basically providing labor. And the owners, the syndicators, they were providing the components, so the cabinets, the granite, light fixtures, stuff like that. And I, you know, we were just installing them, and I was like, man, you know, those guys are dropping off 30 units worth of cabinets or sinks or whatever at a time. Meanwhile, it's taking my guys, you know, taking one crew 2 weeks to completely, you know, turn a unit. And I said, I've got to find out about that. I want to know how I can sell 30 at one time. And so I started researching, got into finding out about like manufacturer direct and importing, and actually got off into doing that. And we went on to, you know, got into to supplying cabinets and granite, light fixtures, hardware, door fixtures, plumbing fixtures, flooring, LVP flooring, stuff like that. The components of the rehab, started supplying those and did that well over 3,000 units. That introduced me throughout that process. I got to know several syndicators and owner and operators. So I got a pretty good understanding of what they were doing, you know, kind of watched and learned from them, had a couple of them take me under their wing a little bit and show me a little more in depth. In return, I started brokering some of the components. So I wasn't, you know, at first I was buying them and then reselling them. And then I started brokering them, which saved them a little bit of money. But in return, it allowed me to work with their acquisitions departments. So I really got to see sort of in behind the scenes of, you know, what they were looking for in an acquisition, how many units, what kind of cap rates, you know, what were they, you know, budgeting for expenditures, you know, for CapEx. And it really gave me an in-depth of behind the scenes of these very successful syndicators, owner and operators, how they were running their operation. And so that threw me into syndicating. I said, you know what? I see it now. I'm going to go do it. And so I said, today I'm going to go out and syndicate. So I started going out and I was like, I'm going to go syndicate. So I started calling brokers and started trying to raise capital. And I really kind of fell on my face in syndicating. I really kind of failed at that because I didn't realize what I didn't see. I seen what they were doing, how they were doing it. But what I didn't see was, you know, the 10 years of relationships that they have with brokers and, you know, millions of dollars that they bought and it was able to raise and the track record, more or less, their experience and track record. I didn't realize that at that time. And that was the big piece that I was missing. So I really kind of failed at syndicating and actually found myself in a position to where, because as you can tell, I'm a talker. And so I got an opportunity to raise some capital, raise some equity for other people's deals. And in return, they were going to give me some GP, some points of the general partnership. And I started doing that. They give me the materials and I was like, man, these are actually pretty good deals. You know, knowing what I knew from them, I said, these are actually pretty good deals. So I got behind them from a marketing standpoint. I took them to social media. I started making phone calls and I actually was able to raise the equity for those, or not all the equity, but I raised enough equity to be able to get a piece of the pie on about 655 units. It was three different acquisitions, told them about 655 units. I said, man, this might be my calling here. You know, I kind of found a way to work myself in the deal. And it was basically just through marketing and calling and talking and doing what I do naturally. But it also, that kind of opened up into the equity space, given private equity and hedge funds and venture capital. And I was like, oh, wow, I really like this space. You know, I like real estate. I like syndicating, but I really like the side of raising capital, putting funds together, you know. And so I went kind of down that journey. And that's really full circle of how I land to where I am at now of basically having my own funds. I went on to start my own funds, you know, and be able to raise the capital for the equity if I do a syndication or something like that. And that's really what led me to where I am now, to where we're doing our own deals and we still JV a little bit. And then in the private equity space, we help out with some growth equity or actually some merger and acquisitions in those.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, that's a really great overview of your, you know, very varied history in the real estate space. It's pretty cool that you move from general contractor to, well, syndicator back to kind of like working on the GP team. And what was it that was compelling to you about moving from the general contractor role to, you know, more of the syndication role?
The biggest thing for me was, I think I've always been kind of chasing scale, like the ability to scale, you know, as a GC. I could only do what I could do with how many crews I had. You know, our average size, you know, under as a GC was maybe 150 to 200 units, right? Which is a lot, but it takes a long time to do that. Then I went into the supply and the components, importing and whatnot. Well, that enabled me to get up to like that 200, 250 range. You know, I was able to jump 100 units in scalability just because I was selling products versus having to, you know, rely on the manpower. Then getting into the syndication, now I'm like, man, I could actually, you know, I could actually buy these things. You know, I went from working on it to, man, I could actually buy these. And so on that side, the size of assets really stayed the same, but let's face it, the income, you know, would go up because you'd be able to make an acquisition fee, you'd have an ownership stake, the whole nine yards. And then getting into the fund model, again, it's really the sky's the limit when you're in raising capital and having setting a fund up. I mean, to be able to raise a $10 million equity fund and you know, and we're still doing micro funds. But I really think what I've always kind of chased is the scalability. You know, something I like to be in stuff that can scale. You know, it has no geographical bounds, no limitations. I mean, you know, we're not there yet, but the only thing that's stopping us really is our own mindset and our own willpower to go from, you know, the $10 to $30 million funds that we're doing to be a, you know, $100, $150 million fund. There's no reason why we couldn't do it.
Yeah, that's definitely pretty impressive for sure. So, Will, I know you are passionate about sustainable investing in your properties. Can you give us an idea of what sorts of deals you're doing right now and how you're making them sustainable?
Well, what we're looking at, like I mentioned a while ago, what we're looking at is, you know, overall quality, the quality of life for our tenants. You know, when we go into, you know, a community and it, or, you know, that's really what it is to us. I mean, you take mobile home parks, multifamily specifically, when you're going into those, you know, some of the best things you can do is create a sense of community. For example, we're working with a group out of Austin to where they're even looking at how can we bring in sort of a like paying for your medicine, you know, you like your telemedicine, you know, that comes in the mail, stuff like that. How can we bring that in and actually make that part of the rent, right? And so this is overall, you're trying to increase the quality of life of your tenants, trying to make a better standard of living and building a sense of community there, a place where people want to live, but also can prosper living there. But on the other side of it too, because, you know, as an investor, yes, it's nice to be, you know, have the philanthropy aspect to you, to where you're giving back and doing all this stuff. But I also have a fiduciary duty to my investors to try to get, you know, total returns and as much returns as I can. So every time it's kind of a double-edged sword. It's like, yes, we can go out here and we can, I mean, you know, if you want to say it this way, you can go out and give free rent. It's like, we can buy a whole community and let everybody live there for free. Like, would that really help? But on the other side, you know, you're trying to generate the best returns for your investors. And so it's kind of a double-edged sword. But if you're smart about it and you look at stuff like, just like what they're doing with our colleagues down in Austin with sort of incorporating the telemedicine or the subscription, medical subscription service into your lease. Well, you know, if you get somebody, and let's just call it like it is, if you get somebody that's down to their last, you know, $800, you know, $1,000 in their checking account, and they're thinking, okay, do I pay my rent this mortgage that includes my medicine? Or do I not? And I don't, you know, now I'm not just losing my, you know, now I'm not just getting behind a month on my lease, which is not so bad. You know, I can make that up, whatever, but I'm missing out on this month's medicine. Like, you know, how does that, you know, it changes the mindset. And actually, I think it makes the investment a little more secure. So in that case, you know, as long, it's kind of a mutual agreement, you know, as long as your tenants are willing to, and this comes from us from the screening standpoint, as long as, you know, you got good tenants in there and they're willing to, you know, commit to making their payments and stuff like that, then you're going to reward them with, you know, a better place to live that's encompassing, you know, more aspects of their life, that's making things easier for them.
What are some other examples? What are some of the other examples of ways that you're improving the communities?
So, like I told you before, I grew up on a farm. And, you know, I always had a garden and I love that still to this day. And so I love being able to go in and put in community gardens, and that's stuff that we budget for that. We actually pay for it. A lot of the tenants, they love to be able to come there and actually participate in that. You know, I'm big for kids. I think kids are sometimes put in, you know, I come from a split home. And so, you know, a lot of these things are kind of personal to me, but, you know, a lot of times the kids are not put in these situations, you know. Something as simple as a garden for a child may teach them, you know, discipline, respect, hard work. You know, it teaches them some good attributes to have, you know, for growing up. And it did for me anyway, as I was a troubled little boy until I went to the farm, and then, you know, I went in all in and stuff. And so, you know, stuff like that. And then, of course, the obvious stuff, I don't talk about it too much, because when you're talking about ESG or sustainable investing, is obviously...
Can you just, for our listeners who aren't familiar with that term, break it down?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Okay, ESG stands for environmental, social, and governmental. Environmental is kind of the really sort of first leg, and we've really kind of made it through that and moving on to the second and third. But environmental is kind of what it stands for, which is the, you know, energy offsets, solar, wind power, you know, water conservation, you know, the environment, you know, it's cleaning up after yourself, you know, trying to do we're doing some trash programs and stuff like that, recycling. Like I said, water conservation, you know, we're not letting, you know, we're putting in devices to where something as simple as water runoff from a parking lot. You know, the cars sit there all day, they drip oil, they drip AC, you know, you come in from running your AC and it's dripping and all that stuff. So you got oils and you got synthetics and different things that are going into the environment. And so we'll do something as maybe, and sometimes it's as simple as planting a green patch that water passes through to filter. So, you know, because that green patch could actually be dug up and replaced. You know, it can be dug up, dealt with, and then replaced in a sensible manner to be able to not let it just running off into the creeks. You know, you don't want it to go to the creeks, and then the creeks go to the rivers, and you know, and then it goes to our oceans and all that stuff. The S, the social, that really, when I first heard it, I was like, man, what is that? You know, it's social media. What are we doing here? But it really stands for more social, meaning the social, as far as the community that you're involved in. So for us, it's the, you know, the communities that we're investing in. How can we get them involved? How can we have programs to, you know, to give back? Are we helping the community socially, you know, helping them with a social impact? And then of course, governmental or governance would be a better way to saying it. Again, I thought that was, when I first heard it, I thought that might've been something from a, you know, like, what is that doing with the government? But it's actually governments, meaning the government body of the investments. Like, what are our beliefs? What are our thoughts, our views? How are we moving forward? What are we pushing for? And, you know, I think some people miss that in ESG. They think, oh, well, we'll go out and we'll buy a building and we'll do solar panels, you know, and we're going to offset energy and we're going to put in water meters and we're going to conserve water. And, you know, it's like, okay, that's great. Well, you're really only hitting one third of, you know, the aspect of ESG. You know, what are you doing for the community? You know, what are you doing for the tenants there? How are you building the quality of life for them?
What are some examples of the G that you found for multifamily?
The governance for multifamily, really, that's for me, it's really foresight is what I'm looking at. Because, you know, we're already talking about and implementing some of these, you know, these components that are kind of hitting. But for me, the governance is not only the foresight, the planning. You know, you got to have the vision, really. It's planning the vision for the future of that asset, what you're doing, you know, thinking down the road. But it's also, you know, making sure that what you're practicing what you're preaching and measuring those. You know, that's kind of been the toughest part of ESG is what's the measurable impact. You know, if you have a hedge fund comes to you or a family office and they come to you and they say, we love what you're talking about. You know, we really want to get behind this ESG, especially through COVID. You know, reports have shown that, you know, ESG sustainable investments have weathered better through the pandemic. You know, we're really all in now. We want to go after it. You have to be able to produce, you know, proof that you're actually A, practicing what you're preaching, B, doing what you're saying. And then three, it has to be a measurable, you know, component. You can say, hey, look, because we implemented this work program, here's a good one for social, is like we're doing work programs. And this never dawned on me until we went through COVID, is that, you know, I've always been an entrepreneur, never had a job. You know, I've always worked for my own self. Well, entrepreneurship kind of comes natural to me. Well, it didn't dawn on me until we were going through COVID that, hey, maybe these tenants, some of them don't have those entrepreneur tendencies and abilities that I do. They may need help finding a job. So as something as simple as doing, calling around to the entrepreneur center or the business center or, you know, local factories or whatever, job boards, and doing something as simple as a job board posting at your properties and saying, hey, if you're looking for a, you know, a job, if you've lost your job, here's a list of them. And, you know, we're always looking for stuff around here. We will hire you, but we're not, you know, we'll give you a credit on your rent, because at the end of the day, it's all about getting our bills paid too. Like I said, it's that fiduciary duty. And so, you know, being able to not only talk about it, but be able to, you know, implement those, measure them and report on them is what I think the governance really stands for. You got to practice what you preach. You can't be talking about it because it's a buzzword, you know?
Yeah, that's really awesome. I love to hear about how you're managing that and tracking that. And it's just great to hear that you're so motivated in that arena. And what would you think like motivated you to get into that sort of sustainable ESG part of real estate?
I blame it on my kids. I'll be honest with you. Well, me as a kid and then my kids, like I say, I'm really passionate about my kids. So, you know, growing up, like I said, on the farm, I loved being outside. I love, you know, being in the woods. I loved hunting and fishing. And now that I have, you know, I've got a 5-year-old, an 8-year-old and a 10-year-old. And, you know, I love taking them fishing. We love going outdoors. I mean, we just dug a pond behind the house and, you know, stocking it full of fish. My 10-year-old, I looked down there the other day and he was holding up a fish. I mean, you know, first fish he caught out of it. So I love the outdoors. And for me, it's looking at my kids being so young and you know, thinking, well, what if they don't? I know how I enjoyed it as a kid and going hunting with my parents. And now I enjoy taking them as a parent and getting to experience it from that end. And now I'm looking forward saying, well, you know, what if my kids don't get to experience the great outdoors that I did? Or, you know, what if this, what I'm seeing, like I told you, we was fishing the other day in the bass boat and we go into a cove and it's literally 20 foot deep of bottles and tires and drums and styrofoam and plastics. And I mean, and that's just one of many of coves in one lake that's, you know, one of many lakes in the world. And it's becoming the true pandemic is pollution and just ruining this earth. And I don't think that, you know, in one sense you can sit back and say, well, you know, what can one person do? You know, like I can only do so much, but for me, it's somebody's got to start, you know, somebody's got to put the foot forward and try to make a difference. And that's where I'm coming from. I'm doing it for, you know, my kids so they can have a good place. And for other kids that enjoy the outdoors, I mean, and then, you know, hopefully I think good's contagious. So, you know, hopefully by doing good, other people can catch on and you know, it takes one and then hopefully we can get this thing snowballing and hopefully make some corrections. I don't think anything's going to change in the short term. There's still too many people that just have the wrong mindset, but you know, if we can make a small difference then, but that's the motivation it's really just the love of outdoors.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think that's really awesome. And obviously taking inspiration from your kids and your upbringing. So that's really awesome to see you caring and doing so much in that space. So Will, why don't you tell us what it is that you're working on now? Like, I know you're not just doing multifamily. So what else is on your plate?
Yeah, well, multifamily, you know, again, that's kind of our core. It's where I come from, but it's also very expensive right now. And in my opinion, I mean, we're still finding deals. I mean, we're focusing heavy on direct marketing. I mean, we're doing things that are kind of outside the norm. You know, we're not really going to brokers. We're doing direct marketing, direct outreach, social marketing, mailers, text messaging, phone, cold calls. I mean, we're doing whatever we can to try to get direct access because those are the only deals that we're really still finding that still have, you know, some spread in them, still have enough meat on the bone, so to speak, are the direct. And so if we can find those in multifamily, but we're being selective, you know, we're not going after these sub-4 caps and stuff like that. They're just better product out there. Mobile home parks is another one that's really come up the radar on us. They has a lot of the same aspects as multifamily, better cap rates, better cash flow, the cost seg or depreciation value is not as good, but it's still a really great component. The other leg that we're looking at is, a few things that we're dabbling with. One would be debt. I really like in debt right now, private debt and lending. I think it's a great place to be.
Flippers or to who?
More commercial. So we stick more with commercial. We are looking at a sort of a flipper. We will have the means to do flipping, but right off the bat, we're more looking at commercial lending. That's just kind of a place that we like to play. But I don't know, between my own personal experience and different things and going with what's happening, I just think private lending is going to be a really good place to be, or lending in general. So we're looking at doing a fund to where we can lend out of that fund with sort of an evergreen and just be producing returns or paying out dividends, I'm sorry. And then also, you know, we're looking at being able to just sort of broker some of those as well. The other place we're looking at is private equity, meaning mergers and acquisitions, if you will. Businesses are on sale, in my opinion. I think good cash flowing assets are like a business is on sale right now. It brings in a different components because you're not really buying a real estate, you know, so the valuations are a little different. But I think it's a great place to be. I mean, there's, you know, baby boomers are the biggest generation that's owning businesses. A lot of them are pretty successful. They've been in business for 20, 30 years. They've been through up and down a couple of downturns and now through COVID, and they're just ready to retire. A lot of our kids are off in their own professions, you know, and they don't really know what to do with them. So we're liking the business. Growth equity is another one that we're in right now. Like I said, where we're taking businesses that have a proven track record, doing really well. We're bringing a cash infusion as long as we got a, you know, a defined capital event with not too far down the road. We don't want to, you know, we want to ride with them, but it's not a ride till you die type of deal. So we're, you know, we want to ride with them for a little while, make sure they're doing what they're saying they're doing, and then we can hit a capital event. And that's producing some pretty solid, you know, cash on cash returns. So kind of spread out a little bit. We do have one office, but like I said, that office is kind of it's unique. It's rented to the U.S. government, been there for 20 years, just re-signed the lease. So little different. We're finding some nuances here and there. New development, we've got one we're looking at on a new development just because of the inventory for multifamily. This is a new multifamily, new development for multifamily. Still being a licensed GC, I still have my import business as well. So my wholesale distribution business. So we can source direct for cabinets and countertops and whatnot, which makes the development piece look very, very enticing, I guess. There's some pretty good returns on it right now. So we are looking at those models as well. So we're just kind of stabbing at a few different things, I guess would be the way to say it, just because we're actually seeing some solid returns in three or four different little niche areas.
For sure. Yeah. No, very interesting. It's great to hear what, you know, you're excited about on the horizon. And, you know, it does seem like it's a challenging environment with multifamily and where cap rates are at. I mean, I know people are doing deals. So yeah, thanks for that overview. Well, so great to have you on, Will. Thank you for sharing your background and, you know, what you're working on. Will you please let the listeners know how they can get in touch with you and anything else you'd like to share?
Yeah, LinkedIn's probably the best for me. You can search Will Morris. I think that my handle or something's like at Hey Will Morris. Facebook the same, Will Morris or Hey Will Morris. Instagram, Twitter, I'm on all of them. YouTube, you can search Will Morris on there. Go to the channel, and then if you want to check out our website, it's blueauragroup.com. And so check it out.
Awesome. Well, I hope you all check out some of Will's content and his website. Will, thank you so much for coming on and sharing a bit about your journey and your why and your passions. So awesome to have you on. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.